And welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and I am here in the studio with Lauren Landis. I didn't read her text because I don't text in radio disc jockey. Patty's out today. Why?
Patty's out today. She's got the cooties.
Oh, okay. So
i.e. allergies. I totally understand.
Oh, I thought you were going over to give her a cootie shot afterwards.
No.
Oh, okay. And we can talk like teenagers today because our guest is Michael Teeter. He is the Chief Program Officer for Big Brothers Big Sisters Lone Star, which is one of the largest Big Brothers Big Sisters chapters in the country, isn't it?
It's the largest.
The largest. Yeah. Okay, of course. It's Dallas. We have the biggest.
By two, I think.
Huh.
By two times, I think. The largest of
wow.
Almost 300 affiliates around the country.
But it wasn't started here in Dallas. That's the interesting thing.
No.
Started in New York.
Absolutely. Started in New York in 1904. The story, as I understand it, is the boys kept coming to a county clerk's office, getting in trouble over and over again. And at one point, the county clerk turned to somebody and said, "We should find Big Brothers for these guys. Maybe that would make a difference." And sure enough, they pulled together a meeting of men in the community, and they started doing that. And it kind of was birthed from there.
That's awesome.
It's still a wonderful program. I did a story on it a few weeks ago in the Dallas Voice, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. One thing about Big Brothers Big Sisters, they are a beneficiary of Black Tie Dinner this year, which is wonderful. You know, when people saw that, I think they were surprised. When I started looking into it, I think it's the best addition that we've made to Black Tie. Your programs are completely welcoming of gays and lesbians and transgenders and bisexuals and even Lauren.
Even Lauren. Absolutely.
But I'm really not kidding. They're completely, because I think most people, and I probably had this misconception partially too, think that, oh, they probably don't want someone like me. But you do.
Right. And I think that's Actually, it's one of the reasons why we applied to be a beneficiary, because I run across that so often, of even within my circle of friends, people being surprised that an organization who has a 100-and-whatever-year history of working with children would quote, let someone who's LGBTQ into the circle. And the fact is, we have, forever, and knowingly for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I've been with our organization since right about 16 years, and came out to my boss then, myself, not long after coming to work there. And then it was within a couple of weeks, it made the national news that our national organization, and I didn't know this, but they've been grappling with it for a little while and decided to officially take a stance to include sexual orientation into the policy and procedure, because the fact is affiliates across the country had been welcoming of LGBT people. But when you're in the business of trying to create healthy relationships, and part of being healthy is to be good with yourself and open and honest to others, and here we're trying to do that for kids, and it starts with our volunteers, and so we needed to really say that up front. So so that's been in place for quite a long time, and years later, even gender identity was added to that clause. But but even with that, even the fact it was in the national news for a good amount of time, there was still a need to break that awareness barrier that we really are open to all folks. So that's true of all religion, all political parties, all whatever. We're a group that's looking to bring healthy people into lives of children.
So I think you're right. People are surprised about the Boy Scouts of America, I'm sorry, about Big Brothers and Big Sisters having added sexual orientation and gender identity, because I think they do think of that organization along with, like, the Boy Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, it's for kids. They probably don't have that.
Right.
Probably, don't have us included. And when you all did include it, I don't remember it being that big of a deal in the news.
Yeah, sometimes when you just do something and you just put it out there, it's not a big deal. Like when you came out to your boss, I'm sure the attitude was, okay, you know, thanks for letting me know. We want you to bring your whole self to work.
Right. But I do remember, here starting new in this job, and I think it was Nightline, that dates me right there, I guess. But, you know, watching Nightline that couple of weeks during that being the national news, and our national leaders up, you know, on one side of the screen, and the other side of the screen was folks that were really arguing for why LGBT people shouldn't be allowed to be around children. And it was disturbing because they're talking about what we do and, you know, why are they worried about what we're doing? But at the same time, as an individual and as someone who's new with this organization, I was really gratified to see that at a national level, and it was true here locally as well, stood by what was right and kind of weathered the storm. And after a while, it just kind of was no longer an issue. Mm-hmm. And frankly, when the gender identity was brought into our national standards and local standards, I don't recall any ripple effect of that at all. I don't recall any call or anything. So maybe it just shows in the 10 years or whatever that was, how much progress we've made nationally.
Before we get into some more stories about things that you do and how you affect the lives of kids, how many kids are you actually serving, your organization, your local organization?
And this year we'll serve over 6,000 youth, with each one with their own mentor.
So that's 12,000 people involved in your program. Mm-hmm. How do you keep track of that many people?
Well, we've got a few staff who's, we kind of divide our work into different segments. You know, we have the folks that are out trying to recruit the volunteers. We have others that are getting the word out to family members and schools and whatever groups to let them know that if you have a child who needs a mentor, how to do that. And then we have teams of people who do all the interviewing, and then we have others, once a volunteer and a child are matched together, whose full-time job is to support, oversee, look after upwards of 100 matches, as we call it, a volunteer and a child together, we call it a match. So mm-hmm. It takes staff, takes time, takes resources, databases.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an amazing number of kids whose lives you're mm-hmm. affecting. And I don't mean LGBT kids. I mean just kids mm-hmm. of all everything, like you said, right, coming from all sorts of families. Okay, if somebody wants to volunteer, and maybe we should talk about this more at the end after people have heard a little bit more about Big Brothers Big Sisters. If somebody wants to volunteer and isn't sure, you know, I never worked with kids. I don't have kids. I sure like helping them. I like to see kids succeed. Mm-hmm. I don't mind paying my school taxes because when I'm at work, I want other people who I work around to be literate. You know, it's all those things, but I've never done it before. Mm-hmm. How do I even figure out if this is right for me?
Well, for one, I think it's good to help people realize that we're not asking them to be foster parents mm-hmm. or teachers or taxi cab drivers or Santa Claus or anything. We're asking people just to be able to put themselves into the life of a kid, to be their friend. And so when we talk to someone who's interested, it really is just trying to help them realize that they do in fact have something of value mm-hmm. that by spending one-on-one time with a kid on a regular basis can really have an impact. So it's not the right thing for everybody. We know it. Mm-hmm. I mean, frankly, there's some people out there that we would choose for them not to be with a child.
Oh, LaRon.
But that is no, we said LaRon would be okay. But you know, beside that, I think whether you're really outgoing or you're really connected or really have money or don't have any of that, you probably have something that there's a kid there could benefit from. So part of our job is to find that right mentor for the child and the right child for the mentor.
And how do you match them? Do you put them together and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't?
Sometimes it doesn't. I guess that's a fair statement. But mm-hmm. We go to a lot of trouble trying to get to know the child and frankly the family or the school situation they're in, as well as the mentor. We're looking for a variety of factors that we've learned over our years are predictive of what match relationship is likely to make it versus what is not likely to make it. And so it might be a similar interest. It might be a teen that has a certain challenge that needs someone to help them with that, and we find a volunteer who has experience with that challenge. You know, that might be an example. Some factors like how close or far apart are they? Frankly, if I match LaRon, do you live in Dallas? Assume LaRon's somewhere nearby.
Garland.
If I match LaRon to someone who lived in Weatherford, it probably won't work, even at the best, because just the driving across the Metroplex would wear him down. After a while, he'd say, I need to get out of this. So we're looking for someone who's within, 15 to 30 minute drive from their homes. Again, similar interest, skill sets, that sort of thing.
And go ahead.
So, for those people who are worried about their children growing up with adults, before you quote unquote accept somebody, I'm assuming you do a very thorough interview and background check and that type of thing.
Right. If there's anything that Big Brothers Big Sisters is probably known for, it's the series of steps we take to make sure our kids are safe. Some might even criticize it might be too much or take too long, but frankly, at the end of the day, we want to be able to say to that child, we want to be able to look at their parent or their guardian in the eye and say, we have really vetted this person we're saying that we're going to introduce you to, because we do want it to be a safe situation. So for a volunteer, the process, if I can just kind of walk through that, it starts with an application. Nowadays, that's online. The application isn't that long. Behind the scenes, I have staff who run criminal background checks. We look nationally. We look at child sexual abuse registry information, all those kind of due diligence things. We're also checking references, obviously family members, people who know them from work personally. We also ask volunteers, have they done any work or volunteer work with children in the past? And if they say yes, we do all we can to check references with those people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes folks that you would not want with the child kind of jump from place to place. And if there ever is a story, may not have ever been led to a crime, may never be show up on a background check. We want to give a chance for folks who care about kids too to be able to say, you might want to just avoid this person. Mm-hmm. Don't dwell on that, but that's just part of our process. We check social media. Again, we're looking for folks that'll be good representatives of the organization, as well as good role models for the youth. So all that's kind of happening behind the scenes after someone turns in their application. Once that application is received, we have our staff will call them up and set up an interview. So we spend about an hour and a half or so in a one-on-one interview with the volunteer. Some of that's exploring safety concerns, but most of it, frankly, is looking at their ability to commit. Because we're asking our volunteers to spend time with their youth they're mentoring, ideally every week, sometime every week, at least twice a month, for at least a year. And we need to look at they may have really good intentions, but if they can't really commit to doing that, then we really rather find them another way to serve. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of our kids have had a lot of adults in and out of their lives, and we're not trying to add another one who's going to be short term. So the commit issue, and then the third area really we're looking at is what kind of child should they be matched with. So we're kind of exploring their interest, the things that they would rather not deal with. We have folks that have, you know, perhaps themselves were abused as a child. They would rather not be matched with a child who has that because it's just too close to home. So we're just trying to be sensitive on those issues.
Or sometimes that might be the right person.
Exactly. That in their history might be something they feel like is the strength that they could bring to someone who's going through that.
And help the kid heal.
Right, and so our staff ultimately will take all those things into consideration as we're not only deciding which volunteer to accept, but who to match them to.
Mm-hmm. How often do you try a match and it doesn't work, and so you move them on to the next one? And does the parent of the child, because mostly there's single parent families.
About 75% of our kids happen to be from a single parent home. It's not a requirement, but that is a pretty frequent.
And the ones who are from two parent homes, are there different reasons?
Sure. Laurent and I were talking about this ahead of time. We really work hard not to put a stigma on our kids that they have to be broken or some problem to be in the program. We think every child, every one of us could benefit from a mentor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But because resources are short, we want to make sure it goes to the kids that really could use it the most. So, mm-hmm. So again, a single parent would often be ones that would call and say, I really, you know, especially say a mom or a grandparent saying, my son could really use someone to play ball with or do something. So that's a pretty typical scenario. But, it might be a parent in the military, an absent parent. It might be, we have a fair number of kids, sadly, have parents in prison. And so you're looking at that kind of a situation. Half of our programming is kind of school-based, where the volunteers, children are brought to our attention because of a school teacher or a counselor who sees a need. And that child may have a very good home life and whatnot, but for whatever the case, the parent, the school teacher sees they need someone to give them some one-on-one attention.
I can see one example of where a kid might have two parents and they just need the mentor. the LGBT kid who just came out in school or, you know, and can't tell the parents for whatever reason.
Right.
Do you run into that one much?
And it seems like more and more recently, frankly. I think the research is backing up the fact that LGBT kids are coming out sooner or willing to talk about it earlier. And so we are seeing that sort of thing come up more. And in fact, to say too, David, just real quick, one of the strengths, there's some research out there about, and this could be true of anyone who cares about kids, as you look to build strengths and resilience in a child, one of the strong things you can do is help bring other healthy adults into their life. Mm-hmm. So again, if you're a parent out there and you're trying to think, how can I help my child to be that much stronger? You know, a mentor could be a way to do that. I think that's why people reach out to the scouts or football teams or band or whatever, because they're trying to bring other healthy adults into the child life. We're just another way to do that.
We need to take a break in a minute, but how many kids who were menteed become mentors? How many bigs, littles become bigs?
I don't have number, but we hear that story all the time.
Do you?
All the time. And it's one of the most gratifying things as someone who works in the field. So when I hear that story, we have staff who are little when they were young. I often will wear a Big Brothers Big Sisters branded shirt or something, and I'll be at the grocery store, and someone will go, you know, I was a little brother or a little sister in your program, or my sister, you know, whatever. It's just amazing the network of folks who have been in the program or had a child in the program or something. And so it's we're kind of a little silent army out there of folks. You think about the thousands of kids every year we're serving, and the number of touches that occur. But we don't have a building. We don't all show up in one spot. It all happens throughout the community, and it's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, how do you train somebody who isn't gay to work with a kid who turns out to be, or how do you? You know, if you're an LGBT, how do you deal with the parent who doesn't want that LGBT mentor with their kid? Words aren't coming out today. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm David Teffet, and I'm here with Laurent Landis. The late Patty Fink is extremely late, and she'll be back with us next week. Mike Oteter is our guest. He's the chief program officer from Big Brothers Big Sisters Lone Star.
I'm Jelinski Brown with Research Center United Black Element, and I listen to Lambda Weekly radio program on 89.3 K9, the voice of the people. I am the people, so hear me speak.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. We are talking to Mike Oteter. He is Chief Program Officer for Big Brothers Big Sisters Lone Star. First of all, with all of, you know, with so many people coming out and whatever, what about any big gender neutrals?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay, good. So you really do want a big, diverse, you're looking for the person. You are not looking for any kind of a stereotype, because there are all kinds of kids out there.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things I actually enjoy, because every once in my staff will come up and say, I have this volunteer who has this about them. It's like, well, we would call that maybe a volunteer that's hard to match, but not an issue of eligibility. It's just a matter of that volunteer needs a specific kind of child or a specific, you know, situation. And we're upfront with our volunteers about that sort of thing.
You know, so many times we have transgender people on the show, and most of them have come out later. It just wasn't available as kids. The Williams Institute has doubled the estimate for number of transgender people in this country this year. Originally, their estimate was 0.4% of the population. Now it's 0.8% of the population. There are so many trans people who've come out later, and they're looking at these young teenagers who are coming out as transgender themselves. They're not, you know, they're not transitioning necessarily, but maybe presenting as the opposite sex or as the sex they understand themselves to be. I would think you'd have a big need for transgender bigs. And by the way, the terms are for big brother, big sister, big couple, big whatever. Those are the bigs, and the kids are the littles.
Right. And we use mentor more and more, or mentee a lot, too.
I like bigs and littles. I just like that.
Historically what we've called them. Yeah, we actually, it goes back to when we, for me, when we first were looking at applying to be a beneficiary of Black Tie. That same week, I had a student apply to be an intern from UT School of Social Work, and I work with a lot of interns. And I saw on her resume that she had volunteered in Denton for a group called Outreach Denton. And I thought, huh. And so I called her and I said, by the way, what is this Outreach Denton thing? And she told me it's a youth group that supports LGBTQ youth, and gave me a little history. And I called the woman that's been dealing with that, and I talked to her about it, and she told me, we met for coffee later that week, and I just very quickly learned a lot about this group and the need in Denton. You know, you think about all the need in the Dallas and whatnot, but this up in Denton, of these youth that needed a safe space. Mm-hmm. And the Unitarian Church there had hosted this group for years, and she had been part of it for a while.
You know, the way that started was the pastor at that church moved here from San Francisco, and when she realized there was nothing for for gay youth up in that area, that the closest was 30 miles away, she was horrified. It was like about the first program that she instituted when she came here.
Well, they're doing some good work, and Kat, Ralph is the person I've been referring to, but Kat said, you know, Mike, a couple of years ago when I first started, I had like 3 or 4 kids that would come every Sunday, and so I was able to give them a lot of one-on-one attention. So now I've got 25 to 30 show up, and I can't be what they need. And that's where her, you know, just so the stars lined up, that we were looking to who could we partner with as the need out there and whatnot. And she says, I have a lot of youth. And she said she had a lot of transgendered youth, a lot of gender neutral youth, and really wondered, is this, could we really meet that need? And so it's been about 2 months ago, actually, again, Outreach Denton helped us host a volunteer recruitment event, and they use their social network circles and whatnot, and we had about 20, 25 adults, some transgendered, some we had a straight couple with their kids, little kids with them. We had all in between.
Oh,
and
awesome.
And it was really gratifying to see there were folks that saw, again, there's a need and we're looking for a way to connect. So we actually had several volunteers that have gone through the whole process and are ready for a child. And so tonight we're actually going to meet with the youth. They just started up now, school started, to talk to them about what having a mentor would look like. And and so I think we'll see, frankly, I know we're going to see out of this some transgender youth and volunteers come together, because that's what the need is.
That's great.
I want to go back to a potential or possible when you're recruiting possible bigs or a big brother or a big sister. I know you said that they don't have to be Santa Claus, or they don't have to be, you're not asking them to be a foster parent. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the things that they actually do when as part of their mentoring?
Really, we just ask the volunteer to include the youth in what they do. You know, I remember with my first little brother, and we were matched for 7 years, and, you know, we did a lot of different things. It seemed like it always ended up with going out to eat somewhere. But, you know, it might be going to a sporting event, or we saw different, you know, we go to movies, we go doing things. And that's the main thing. It's just being willing to involve a child into what you do.
One of the things is, you don't have to pay for all of it. Big Brothers Big Sisters gets blocks of tickets sometimes to different things, and will help out with supplying those tickets.
Yes, I mean we do ask our volunteers if they choose to do something, it is out of their pocket. It is not, they're not going to expect the child to pay to go to Six Flags, for
right,
example.
Of course.
But David, your point's really good. It's just part of how do people help us. Sometimes the way they can help us is just to pass on free tickets to things, pass on discount opportunities. And so we get that. And I remember, again, working for the organization as well as volunteering as a Big Brother, we got to take advantage of a lot of that kind of stuff. And, I mean, to the extreme, I mean, Shaquille and I got to sit on the floor of a Maverick game one time and talked about being treated like kings. It was a nice experience. And years later, we had not been matched for a while, and I think he was 20, 21 years old. We were actually walking, and I asked him what his favorite thing to do, and it wasn't the Maverick game. It was just talking.
Really?
You know?
Awesome.
Okay, so a few weeks ago, I guess a couple of months ago now, I did a story about Dennis and James. They are a big couple. one of them decided that he wanted to be a big brother, and the other one was just going to let him do his thing and realize he has to go through a background check too. Okay, I might as well participate. And that's how both of them got involved. They were matched with a couple of different kids, and those kids' parents said, uh-uh. The person that they were finally matched with, the mom said, thank God for the other parents' ignorance. They've been with their little now for about 10 years. And the mom said, you know what? I hear him on the phone with either Dennis or James, just talking to him, to one of them about things that I don't want to talk, that he doesn't want to talk to me about. So when you say just talking is the important thing, that was when I talked to him, he said the exact same thing, that they have such a close relationship that he can talk to them about anything.
Right.
And he's not hiding anything from his mother, and his mother is delighted that he has these two guys to talk to. She said anything he needs, they're there for him. They were on their way one time to Fort Worth. They had theater tickets, and she found out at the last minute it was Dad's night at school. And they, one of them answered the phone, the cell phone, and in the car, and he said, ooh, we're on our way to Fort Worth. We're turning around. We will be there late, but we'll be there. And they were there for him. I mean, these two have just been invaluable to this guy's life.
Well, it's a great story, frankly, but it's a good example, too, because this boy had lost his dad. His dad had died. And
when he was about five.
Mom's, and she's a phenomenal woman. I mean, she really is one of our great advocates and helps us in many regards. And Roger, the boy who's now 16, is going to be somebody special. So he already is somebody special, but he's going to be somebody. He's an adult. But, you know, it's a good testimony of when you keep the focus on what does the child need. A lot of these other stuff kind of sets aside. So when, and you mentioned the process, when we think we have a good match between an adult and a child, before we tell either party who the other person is, we call them and say, we had this volunteer, in this case, a parent, we had this volunteer who we think would be good for your son. Here's some things about them. And then the parent, without knowing the person, can say yes or no. I mean, that's just part of our respect for the parent and guardian. And like you said, in this case, several folks turned him down. Mm-hmm. And it may very well have been because they disclosed that there was a gay couple.
They hadn't met them or anything.
No, they never met. Yeah. It wasn't like anything, a personal thing. But, you know, frankly, we would not have wanted to match Dennis and James to a child in a family that would not be supportive. That wouldn't be fair to them, and it wouldn't be fair to the child. So we do.
And they wouldn't have had a relationship that lasted 10 years.
Absolutely. And the fact that we found a parent who goes, nope, that didn't bother me any. Or even if, I don't think it did, but if, say in a case where she might have had some qualms, she also knows she has the support of the organization that's going to help her through that.
Mm-hmm.
And but regardless, in this case, from day one, she was totally good because the focus was on her son, and the guy's focus was on her son.
Well, Roger really described their first time together. One of the dads was on the sofa just talking to the mom, and or not dads, one of the bigs was on the sofa talking to the mom, and the other one was on the floor playing video games with Roger. And he said he remembers that so clearly. But that's kind of how their relationship has developed, and they're a family now.
And
when I say they're a family, that's not really the goal. When that happens, that's special.
Right. We are trying to create friendships to start with, but we also want friendships that will last.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're healthy and they're for the right purposes and they last, then who knows what comes out of that, right? Mm-hmm. And so I do. We hear, yes, about do we have many former littles become bigs, and we do. But we have a lot of stories where you hear someone say, I've been matched to my little brother for 24 years.
Mm-hmm.
We literally this week, I wish I meant to bring it actually, we got a letter from a Dallas man who said, and it was a $100 check inside of it, which was kind of was nice, a little little extra. But he was letting us know, he was giving the $100 in honor of his little brother on the 24th anniversary of their match.
Oh, wow.
And he had just gotten his wings as a Southwest Airlines pilot.
Mm-hmm.
and just wanted to say, it wasn't even saying thanks to us. It was just in honor of his little brother. Mm-hmm. And we were the ones, the recipients of not really so much the check, but just what a nice, affirming piece mm-hmm. of good news. And so you hear a lot of that sort of thing to people and someone, their wedding, you know, the little's been in their wedding or they, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And so when those things happen, you know we've done our job because we've launched these two strangers into a relationship that made it. And our bellwether is, do they make it to that first year? We want to say, that's why you ask for that commitment mm-hmm. for at least 1 year. Because typically, if they can make it to 1 year, you got them hooked. And they're going to get, you know, our average length of match, if you will, is one of the metrics it follows, mm-hmm. is right about 3 years.
And one thing Roger and James will tell you immediately, if you have any question at all about this, is, I don't care what he got out of it, this has been invaluable to us. Mm-hmm. We have gotten more out of it than he could possibly have gotten from us. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Big Brothers Big Sisters is very affirming of gay kids, gay bigs. Sometimes you're going to match somebody who the big and the parent, they're fine with each other. And then the kid comes out.
Right.
And very often, you know, when you came out, Laurent, was the first person you came out to your parents? Exactly. So, no. I mean, in my family, it was like, yeah, you didn't need to come out. I never did. They said, we grew up with you. We knew. But, you know, very often you're coming out to somebody else who you're close to. Mm-hmm. And in this case, you have a trusted relationship, you might come out to your big. And it could be somebody who is straight, who has, you know, perfectly good intentions and doesn't know how to deal with that. What kind of training or what kind of preparation or what kind of help is available to that big if that happens?
Well, and what you're talking about is something that we've become increasingly aware of, is if the general population has, you know, what's 3, 6, whatever that number is that you'll hear in it is LGBTQ, then if we're dealing with 6,000 kids, that story will happen. And you may have that situation where the child doesn't ever tell, even they're big, don't tell anybody till they're much older. Mm-hmm. But ideally, if we, and this is our goal, is to bring into our program adults that are by nature, or at least able to be trained and supported to be open, safe, affirming people for whatever might come down the line. So,
So to you, it's not a sexual orientation thing. It's something's going to happen with this kid. There's going to be some issue about
life
something.
Life will happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and again, in all our promotional materials, our application, it says in there, you know, we don't discriminate based on lots of factors, including, you know, anything LGBTQ related. So if that's a problem for a volunteer, you know, we try to flesh that out up front. Equally, if they have a problem with any other big issue, then we need to know that because we're looking for someone who could handle, has the potential of handling whatever might play out over the course of the relationship that they're going to enter into. And so some of that, again, is looking for the right kind of person. Our training, our screening really is guiding them in regard to how to be sensitive to the life the child leads and their family, not to put their values on them, not to put their beliefs on them, but how to be child-centered and respect to the family. You know, when you're dealing with people of different economic backgrounds and different, there's a lot of these things just come up. And so it's not our volunteer's job to save the kid, to fix the kid, to change the youth. So in the spirit of that, anything related to LGBTQ, you just kind of ride along there with it, right? So we also want to create, we train our folks on how to develop relationships, how to have interactions that are open-ended questions and not a series of yes, no, and to create an environment in your relationship that a child does feel like, I know this is a safe place to talk about anything. And if they live that out over the course of their relationship, then the odds are if that child is thinking about coming out or not sure about how they feel and all this kind of stuff, that will most likely be someone they do feel like they can talk to. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, all of our mentors have what we call a match support specialist. It's a staff person's full-time job is to be there and support their match. And so part of their training up front is if anything comes up that you're not sure about, you call your match support specialist and you'll get that one-on-one training and guidance. So yes, we had that happen a fair amount of time, and I'm thankful that we have a lot of good stories of people talking about how helpful it was to have somebody to talk to. And we get the same thing from parents, you know, that their mentor ended up being helpful to them as they deal together with their child kind of deciding what to do.
And you know, when I started that first story on Big Brothers Big Sisters, if I had a Michael for every story I was working on, my job would be easy, because he didn't give me one story. He gave me, you know, he thought I was going to do like three or so small stories. Dennis and James's story was so long. I have another one that I'm doing. It was a dad who called me. He has a trans son and who has a big sister. And the son came out to the big sister first. Father's all on board with it, but said, this big sister saved my kid's life because he had somebody to talk to, and she was just great. And she actually, in that case, I have to give him a call before I actually write, but she actually helped the son come out to the dad because they had such a good relationship that had been going on, not as long as Dennis and James, but just a great relationship there. And in the case of trans kids, I mean, the suicide rate among transgender people is astronomical. We could literally say this big sister saved her little brother's life.
I think I heard on one of your previous broadcasts, you mentioned that I think having someone safe to talk to, you know, could increase your chances 30% or something like that child will make it through. I think that's a good example where that's probably true.
Mm-hmm. We need to take a break.
He is a good father.
Right. Yes. Yes. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here with Laron Landis. Josh is on the board, and Mike O'Teeter is our guest. He's the chief program officer for Big Brothers Big Sisters Lone Star, which is the largest, of course. We're Dallas. The largest Big Brothers Big Sisters of 300 different chapters around the country. We're the king of the Big Brother Big Sisters.
Right.
We're the king and queen.
King and queen.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's it. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Hi, this is Valletta Lill, and I listen to Lambda Weekly. I hope that you will too.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and I'm here with Laron Landis. Laron, you had a question.
I'm assuming some of the Big Sisters and Big Brothers have children of their own. Mm-hmm. Are they allowed to, and if so, do they incorporate when they have a little to do things with their children?
Great question. The bottom line premise of what we do is about one-to-one relationships. So when we have a child who's come to us, we're looking for an individual who really will invest their full-time attention, right? Now, you mentioned with James and Dennis, that was an example of a couple. So we have two people giving their full-time attention to a kid, so that's pretty special. But we do have another variation. It's not like we have a lot of this, but it's one of the options of having what we call a big family. And so we would rather, if the intent is to involve your spouse or partner with the student you're mentoring, then let's put it up front and get everybody in the fold from the standpoint of screening, training, support, and including if they have children. So, you know, that's just one of the things we would assess is the family really in a good spot to be able to bring in another child, and how did we even actually talk with the kids and their family, and you know, what do they think about this, or you know, how this work, and it's actually pretty special. But again, if you think back to the premise of just include a child in the life you're already living, that's an opportunity for you to do that, and it's a good opportunity for a child to see how family works, you know, and some good role modeling.
And so, Laron, to answer your question, Danny, who still wants another kid?
Yes.
This might be the good compromise.
Right. It could be.
When it is a big family, do you try to find, you know, Gabrielle is eight?
Eight.
Okay, Gabrielle is eight. Would you want a kid who's also eight in there? Would you prefer somebody older or younger? Every case is different.
Every case is different. So I think if a family came and said, this is what we want, we would explore what is it they want. Why do they think that would be a good thing? So if they say, you know, I've got an 8-year-old daughter who would love to have another 8-year-old little girl to hang out with, you know, then we look at, is that really a good thing is, and if Perry's on board, we'd be on board. If they say we'd rather look for a teenager or whatever it might be, it really, that's the beauty of what we do, you know, because we're not tied to any one group or school or anything. We can roll with every individual situation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's really whatever.
So you'll be getting your application.
Well, there you go.
Soon. I think that's a great compromise.
I think so too.
You know, it's a once a week commitment, and that's it, Laurent.
Right,
It's not what you went through when you got pregnant and you know, you lost your figure, and
I totally did.
If I can share a story, though, when you asked that question about, you know, the other thing that comes up sometimes is can our little siblings be engaged with the mentor? Because, you know, again, when I was matched to Shaquille, who was one of four kids in his family, especially his younger brother, would look. I'd go pick him up, and he'd look at me like, "I want to go too." And it was kind of hard not to involve him, right? And in fact, we worked to get all of them mentors, so that was kind of a cool thing. But his younger brother's mentor was traveled a lot, so when we would do special activities and I'd get these tickets to the things, every once in a while I'd get permission to bring his younger brother with me. And the first time we did that, we did an activity, and then as I said earlier, we always went out to eat. And so I turned to Shaquille and said, "Where should we go eat?" And he goes, "Can we go to that menu place?" And I looked at him like, "What?" And he goes, "That menu place." And, you know, and again, it goes back to what you do. And somewhere along the line, we didn't go to McDonald's, or we went to some place that had a menu. And he, that struck to Shaquille, and he wanted his little brother to experience that. So I guess, so yeah, that we can even involve others from time to time. But again, my staff will get mad at me if I don't reinforce this is about one-to-one relationships, and we're trying to protect that as well. But but that was a really special moment for Shaquille and me both, actually.
When Roger's mom decided that he needed a big brother, she had just lost her husband. She went to a grief support group, and it was somebody in her group who suggested that her kid might benefit from, you know, having a big brother, you know, having somebody to help her while she's dealing with the death of her husband. Yeah. If anybody's listening who has a kid that needs a big brother, you know, we talked about you go to the website if you want to be a big. What if you have somebody who is a little and needs somebody?
Yeah, the same thing. And I think part of what we want to do is empower everybody to advocate for kids. And so I think if you had that kind of child in your life or in your family or you're a teacher or whatever, speaking up on their behalf is good. Talking to their parent or guardian, just as someone spoke to Roger's mother, I think is a healthy thing to do. Getting a child enrolled in our program is not that hard. It's just a matter of outreach. Again, we have if someone goes to our website, the process starts online, so it's pretty easy, or they can call us, and it involves similar things. There's an application, there's an interview, again, looking forward to understand what having a mentor is and what it's not. Are they in a position to commit to the relationship as well? Mm-hmm. Is the parent going to be an active participant? Because we need their set of eyes on what's going on as well. And can they commit over the long haul? And so, so if someone knows a child that could benefit, it most often you're looking at probably 7 years old as the youngest. We can take someone who's six, and usually about to about age of 14, because we want our matches to last 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. And typically when kids graduate from high school, they start to kind of go their different directions.
Sure.
So we want to give them plenty of time. So if you know someone in that age range, I think it's just a matter of making that referral. Unfortunately, we have a lot of children who've already made that phone call. Our waiting list is about 3,000 in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Wow.
Not that I want to say that to discourage anyone from reaching out for help, but that's just a reality. We got to find volunteers. So, but there's these cases like the one the outreach group in Denton, where we talk with them, and they're not talking 7 to 14-year-olds. They're talking 13 to 17-year-olds. And in that case, we partner to say, if we can work together to find volunteers that are going to be in a position to work with 13 to 17-year-olds, and they're willing to commit for the long haul, then we are too. So sometimes groups can line up the age range.
Yeah, and in their case, they provided the littles, but they're also working with you to find the bigs.
Absolutely.
Which is, I mean, that's perfect.
Which is part of our master plan, if you will, is how to find more groups like that across North Texas and, frankly, in other parts of the state where we can find those kind of parts to help us not only find kids but find volunteers.
Okay, so once somebody has been approved for the program and they're they haven't been matched yet, but they have been approved. They've gone through background checks. How much training is there that they need to do?
Yeah, our training, I mean, all through the interview and enrollment process, we're talking with them, so you could almost call that training, I guess. But the actual training is an online course. It's about an hour and a half. So it's not that long, really. And then once they get matched, again, they have a match support specialist who's talking to them at least once a month for some length. And every one of those conversations is an element of ongoing guidance and training. Mm-hmm. And then we have staff that provide ongoing training as well, webinars, in-person, you know, training type things. So it's mm-hmm. really kind of a life of the match long mm-hmm. training and support system.
So why don't we tell, how do people get in contact with you?
Well, our website is the best way. It's www.bbbstx.org. That's our general website. If someone is specifically looking as an LGBTQ person to be a mentor or an LGBTQ youth might become in the program, then I would encourage them to go to the part of that website where you'd add on the /LGBTQ. So again, bbbstx.org. /LGBTQ, and the applications, there's information about the program there. They can kind of play around the website and just kind of learn more about us. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the link to apply is there. We've gotten to where we try to go paperless, so there's a few steps that'll guide you through on how to give you us permission to get your signature and the documents, you know, and those kind of stuff. But just to walk through that process, and then within a couple of days, max, someone should be calling them back and talking to them about the next steps, which would be setting up the mm-hmm. in-person interview.
Yeah, one group that I can imagine would be great with kids, you know, nobody gets along with their parents, but everybody gets along with their grandparents. And now that I'm well into my fourth decade of my 30s, I've been talking to a lot of people. I have younger cousins who are retired. It's driving me crazy because mm-hmm. they all want to know when I'm moving to Florida with them. And I know personally I would go out of my stark, raving, mad mind sitting in Florida because I wake up, I figure out who I'm going to piss off that day, I go do it, I have a wonderful day. I just couldn't do that. But seniors who have right. time on their hands, And also, I mean, as an older person now, Laurent, you must see this, how much more patient I am. Why are people here laughing?
I think David could be an excellent mentor. So, yeah, I mean, the age range for our volunteers is you got to be at least 18. Mm-hmm. We celebrated a big sister a couple years ago who was 101.
Wow.
And so we really do span the age. I do mm-hmm. think, you know, for a lot of folks, you know, when they're having their own children or they're brand new in their job, it might be a little harder to take on mm-hmm. another person, though many, many do. So, but you know, we see kind of, if you looked at the curve of the most number of volunteers for an age group, you know, you see a lot of people in the college, post-college, early mm-hmm. career time, and maybe a little bit of dip, you know, but then you see that pick up when they hit their 40s or 50s, and again, they've lived some life. Maybe they had kids of their own. They kind of learned from their mistakes or what worked well for them, and so all that's very possible. But I shared earlier, we really volunteers can choose one of three paths too. We have programs where you go to the child's home and you go do things out in the community. That's very engaged with the parent and whatnot. We have other programs where you see the child at their school. Some of our partnerships might be like at a Boys and Girls Club or another location where the volunteer goes to that location after school with mentors. And we have we do have a program called Generations where we actually partner with retirement centers and we mm-hmm. bring kids from schools and they see their mentors at the retirement center. And that's, talk about a cool program, because you're talking about, you know, like kids having grandparents again mm-hmm. and then the benefits those folks get by having kids show up every week to see them. It's really pretty nice. And then the third big program is what we call Mentor 2.0, which is for those folks that are probably in their jobs and traveling more, makes it possible because that mentoring is online. So we partner with groups of high school students, and we take over an entire class of high school students, and every student has a mentor. And our staff goes into that class every week and teaches a lesson on college and career preparation. And then during class time, they write their mentor online, and there's a platform they sign into, and there's prompting questions, and the mentor has the whole week to write them back. most of us spend plenty of time online that writing an additional equivalent of an email, but it's structured, mm-hmm. is not that hard. And then once a month, they go to the school, and it's all dates are predetermined, so you already know what dates for the whole school year. Mm-hmm. And you show up, and we feed you dinner, and the mentors and the mentees spend time together at the school, and we have fun activities. And so for a lot of folks that are kind of maybe earlier in their career, travel a lot, or have younger children, that program can find a way. So there really is a place for every child and for every volunteer.
Okay, we skipped over this big sister who's 101 years old. Mm-hmm. How many littles has she had?
Well, she was in our Generations program, so she was a resident of a retirement center. Uh-huh. And she mentored, we introduced her to a little boy in this case when he was in the third grade, and she was with him till he went into middle school. Hmm. And so I think that really was her one experience.
Oh, okay, because I was expecting...
Yeah, she might have been mentoring before in her life.
I was expecting her little, who just turned 80.
No.
Came to the party.
No, but we, Dell Long is one of our lifers. Uh-huh. I saw him the other day, and he is, I think, on his seventh or eighth boy he's mentored, starting when he was in his 20s, and now he's, I don't want to age him, but he's
now
been around
he's in
for
his
a while.
Extremely late 20s.
Yeah, extremely late 20s, and I mean, it's amazing to see this, and it's not like 1 or 2 years at a time. He's mentoring these kids 5, 10 years, and he's got these wonderful stories, and he's mm-hmm. one of our ambassadors to say, you know, you're not necessarily committing for life, but you could.
Well, going back to Dennis and James, I asked Roger where he's thinking of going to school, and he's thinking of going out of state, and Dennis and James are thinking, you know, that's going to be a big trip for us to go visit him, you know, in college. They have no intentions of giving him up.
Absolutely. So, help with that. I mean, that will be a lifelong friendship,
sure.
I have no doubt.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when everybody gets something out of it. Lauren, I could see your family deciding, you know, it's once a week or so. That would be a great way. We have so many things we want to do with Gabrielle, and now we'll have the excuse that we have to do those things that always get put off.
Yeah.
And you'll just go do it.
Oh, yeah. We signed up for something. We're dedicated.
No, I know you are.
Yeah.
I know you are. I have no question. I'm just saying that it would be for you nothing more than, because you're saying, Mike, that, you know, you want the individual attention. You want them to commit that time. I'm saying I think you need this much tiny bit push. All these things we've been meaning to do anyway, this gives us the excuse mm-hmm. to do them.
Yeah.
Well, and it gives you a sense of accountability that probably too often we don't have with the children that are in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, okay, so just a quickie recap, because we are at the end of the show. If you are LGBT, there are lots of LGBT kids out there that could use a mentor.
Yes.
You're really looking for somebody not who's hiding that they're gay. You want them to bring themselves
to
the
program. Be authentic. Absolutely. We want them to be authentic, because that helps us put them in a relationship that's going to be more successful. And frankly, one of the things that I want to make sure people understand, though there are plenty of LGBTQ youth that could use someone as a role model, we want to be in a place of service that someone who's LGBTQ can come and just be a mentor. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, my first 4 kids that I mentored were not LGBTQ.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that didn't make me any less effective
right.
for them, any less, you know. But it's nice to know if you're prone to want to serve, here's a welcoming place to do so.
Mm-hmm. Mike, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
We are just about out of time. Next week, our guest is Brandy Amara-Sky. She's a lot of fun to talk to, so we'll have a fun show next week. Mike, thank you. Lauren, we'll see you next week. Josh, who knows?
Thank you very much.